Welcome to Conversations with the Masters with your host, Master Certified Coach Mary Allen. This special interview series is designed to enlighten and empower you by bringing you the best-selling authors, speakers, and organizations of our time. So get ready to listen not only with your ears and mind, but with your entire being. And now, here's your host, Mary Allen.
Welcome, everyone, to today's Conversations with the Masters call with Dr. Judith Orloff. My name is Mary Allen, and I'm a professional life coach and author of The Power of Inner Choice and your host of the Conversations with the Masters series. I want to welcome all of our live listeners here today and those of you that may be listening to this as a recording. And I want to really thank all of you for continuing to really spread the word about these Conversations with the Masters calls. Specifically want to thank thinkholistic.com and planetteleclass.com for always spreading the word on these great calls. And I'm very excited and honored to have Dr. Judith Orloff with us today. I actually connected with her in a rather serendipitous and intuitive way, which shouldn't be all that surprising given the fact that intuition and energy are her specialty. I've since then been eagerly devouring her book, which is called Positive Energy. And some of the topics we're going to be talking about today include how to transform fatigue, stress, and fear, how to deal with energy vampires, something known as techno-despair, which has something to do with being overwhelmed with email, something we may all be relating to. And we'll also talk about heart-centered sexuality. And let me just share a little bit about Dr. Judith Orloff before we begin. She is a psychiatrist, energy and intuition expert. She's author of the bestseller, Positive Energy, which is subtitled 10 Extraordinary Prescriptions for Transforming Fatigue, Stress, and Fear into Vibrant Strength and Love. Who doesn't want more of that? She also has two other best-selling books, Second Sight and Guide to Intuitive Healing. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at UCLA with an 18-year private practice. She's also known as the advisor to the stars, so she's got quite a circle that she plays in. She's also been featured widely in both print and online venues and a ton of radio and television, including O Magazine, Self, Glamour, USA Today, CNN, PBS, and a ton others. So, Judith, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited about this call.
Well, I am so excited about having you here. You know, and I thought that maybe the place to start is just having you talk a little bit about this epidemic of exhaustion that is going on in the country. And you know, what's the cause of all this fatigue?
Well, you know, I wrote Positive Energy because of this epidemic of exhaustion. As a psychiatrist and as somebody who works with intuition and energy, you know, I've had many, many patients and workshop participants just come in, you know, dragging, exhausted, kind of living their lives just trying to get through the day. And it's so important that we begin to honor our energy needs and really assess them so that we're not tired all the time or sick all the time. And so I think part of what contributes to this is that in our society, we're just such an over-intellectualized culture, and we have this kind of dictum that we need to push until we drop, and that's a good thing. We keep pushing, pushing, pushing until we're so exhausted. And, you know, I'm here to say in the book that this is not healthy, this isn't a good thing, and that we need to honor our energy needs and we need to listen to our intuition so we can tune into our body to find out what we really need to lead a life that's well-paced, that has, you know, sane time management, and so we can have some joy. And also, you know, as we develop spiritually or we develop intuitively, that we can increase our sensitivities and yet remain centered in a very potentially overwhelming world. I think those skills are all really important.
Right. Well, and the idea of actually living from that really balanced state, because one of the things you said, it's almost as though tired has become the normal state of being. It's like, oh, well, you know, we're just supposed to manage stress, and it's just part of the way of life.
I know. Well, it is in Western culture. In the United States, it's part of the way of life. But in Europe, I mean, in France, they take two-month summer vacations. So, you know, we don't even think about that. We push ourselves so hard. But I think the way not to do that is, number one, to first be aware. And number two, you know, really assess your relationships and your own sensitivities. That's one thing I talk about in positive energy is the concept of intuitive empathy. And what this is that some of us are very, very sensitive, and we tend to sense energy around us, and especially negative energy, and we take it into our bodies and get exhausted by it. When I was a little girl, I couldn't go into shopping malls or crowded places because I'd walk in feeling fine and then walk out totally exhausted or with some ache or pain I didn't have before or anxious or depressed or something. And I had no idea what was happening. And I would go to my mother, who was a doctor, and she said, oh, no, dear, you just don't have a thick enough skin. You know, which is not helpful. And what I am is an intuitive empath, somebody who's has a very sensitive constitution. And this isn't something I want to shut off or, you know, grow stronger or tougher. I want to get more sensitive. But the reason I focused on this so much in positive energy was that I know there are many, many of us out there who are sensitive and don't know how to ground ourselves or don't know how to deal with it without overeating, without retreating and becoming a recluse, without becoming anxious, you know, those kinds of things. So it's important to learn how to deal with your sensitivities and honor them and ground them. And learn to work with them, not to shut off. That's not helpful. That won't help your energy at all if you shut off.
Right. And I imagine there's a lot of people listening that are in the helping professions. We have a lot of coaches here on the line. And,
oh, great.
So I imagine there's a lot of people going, that I can totally relate to that. So what are some tips and strategies about how people, especially if you're going to go to, you know, maybe the example of in a public venue where I feel that way too. Go to public places and, you know, end up feeling drained. What can we do without, you know, hibernating?
Well, I mean, the first thing I suggest is on page 29 of Positive Energy, there's a quiz to take to see if you qualify as being an intuitive empath. And I think it's important to take that quiz. And some of the questions include, have you been labeled as, quote, overly sensitive all of your life? Now, that's a giveaway. And number two is, do you find that you need to replenish yourself alone? Number three, do you find that you tend to get overwhelmed and fatigued in crowds? Number four, do you find that you're very sensitive to excessive talking, strong smells, or busyness? I know as an intuitive empath, I can go into an elevator that has a lot of perfume in it, and I feel like I'm being nuked. It's horrible. It's like overwhelms my system. Or as another person might be very, you know, say, oh, what a lovely scent. You know, intuitive empaths are very open to scents and excessive talking. I know I'm very sensitive to people talking a lot and talking in my face.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that drains me. So it's in the initial phases of assessing if you're an intuitive empath to consider those things. And also, intuitive empaths tend to like to take their own cars places because they don't like to get stuck anywhere. You know, as an intuitive empath, I mean, I could love somebody, but I can't stand to be around people more than 3 hours. It just is beyond my limit in a social situation to stay and with anyone beyond 3 hours, usually. So I honor that, and I tell my friends that instead of having to, it's, you know, be in torture and stay 5-hour dinners, long talking, and all of that. I don't like that. I don't need to have all that time with people. So I have to weigh and measure, you know, how much time I, you know, use with people and how much time, you know, is better alone. So to balance that. And also what I found is intuitive empaths tend to really want to be in romantic relationships. and yet you know, a lot of them aren't. And what underlies that is a fear of being engulfed because we haven't learned to assert our square footage needs.
Mm-hmm.
We need to empaths, you know, what I've learned in romantic relationships is I need to have my own room, my own space. When I travel, I cannot stay in the same room or share a bathroom with someone. I need an adjoining room. Otherwise, I just get too overwhelmed. I don't like being in people's presence, you know, 24 hours a day for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't handle it. But I've learned how to deal with that. And in relationships, I've learned how to talk about my need for alone time or separate space. So it's all kind of creative ways of dealing with intuitive empathy and having partners and friends that honor that.
Well, and do you think, I imagine there's people on full spectrums from being really sensitive, and I mean, this is your profession, and it's obviously you're an intuitive empath, and then there's probably people that just, you know, they can hang out in crowds and just never get affected, and probably people along the spectrum. I mean, is it, I mean, how, I guess these same principles and tips would apply whether you're overly sensitive or, you know, everybody's got their, I guess, their tipping point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a spectrum. I mean, there are some people also who are not intuitive empaths. And it doesn't, one is not necessarily better than the other. These are energy types.
Mm-hmm.
You're an intuitive empath, whereas, you know, a lot of my previous boyfriends, you know, have not been intuitive empaths. They've been solid, rock, grounded guys. And
mm-hmm.
for me, that's a really good thing. Because to have two people with that kind of sensitivity really is, you know, quite tricky to handle.
Right. Well, I'm just thinking even myself, I'm like, you know, do I fall into that category? Do I not? There's certainly, it's like, I need my alone time. I love and being able to have whole weekends where I just can retreat and I'm not one that wants to do something every night of the week. But I don't know that I've ever considered myself an intuitive empath.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't. But if you take the quiz, if everybody is interested and wants to take the quiz on page 29 of Positive Energy, even if you answer one or two of those questions, it indicates you have a touch of intuitive empathy and could benefit from some of the strategies in order to balance your energy.
Mm-hmm.
I've received so many emails since the book saying, oh, my God, I'm an intuitive empath. I never realized what I was before, but now I know how to deal with it in myself, and I can help my clients, and I can, you know, deal with my whole life better, because traditional medicine doesn't know how to deal with subtle energies, what I'm talking about now.
Right, right.
If you come in with, you know, oh, I'm so tired, and you're an intuitive empath, and you don't use the strategies I talk about, what typically happens is they'll give you a whole list of medical tests, MRI, blood tests, you know, really torturous kinds of tests, and then it usually comes up nothing. And then you're sent to a psychiatrist like me and given Prozac. That's what happens. And what I'm just wanting everybody on the call to think about today is maybe, you know, there's another way of dealing with this by, you know, giving your clients or taking this quiz first to find out if you are an intuitive empath. And if so, Prozac is not the appropriate treatment.
Right, not at all.
Well, no.
So what are some of the prescriptions that you offer that really can help, you know, can help anyone that's kind of suffering from fatigue and stress and fear, especially if they fall into the intuitive empath category?
Oh, yes. Well, the first rule is that whenever you're around negative energy, you have to start breathing it out.
Mm.
Because what people do is they get afraid and they clamp down and they stop breathing. And what that does is that keeps that negative energy in your body. And so if you're in a stressful situation, if you're around an energy vampire, somebody who's draining your energy, just remember to keep breathing it out, because the breath is sacred prana. It's a filtering system. It's a purifying system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you remember to breathe, and breathing is a sacred act. In the West, we're not taught at all what to do about breath. You know, we're not even taught that it's sacred. It's just something we take for granted that we can breathe.
Right.
And it's such a powerful thing. And when you begin to work with your own energy, the breath is such a powerful way to do that. But just when all else fails, keep breathing.
Right. And we can do that at any time, any place, anywhere we are.
Oh, yes. It makes a huge difference. A huge difference. And, you know, one thing I also believe in very strongly are doing these three-minute mini meditations, which I talk about in Positive Energy. A lot of people feel that, you know, oh, I don't want to meditate because it takes so long and I don't have enough time. But what I've found, and I use this in my life, is that if I meditate for 3 minutes, follow the breath, focus on my heart, and even invoke the presence of spirit for 3 minutes, and just sit there and begin to be replenished with positive energy, then you're recentered again, particularly if you're an empath. If you do this for 3 minutes, you bring your forces together within yourself again, and then you can go back into any environment and be centered rather than frazzled when you deal with it.
I love that as a strategy, and really in just 3 minutes.
Oh, definitely. I use it all the time, and I use it between patients too. So I could ground myself, center myself, let the previous patient go, and then move on to the next one. So it's a very useful strategy in coaching so that you don't have overlap of energies between people.
Right.
And you want to be very clear when you go from one person to the next. You don't want to carry remnants of the previous person's energy in your energy field.
Right.
You don't want that. You want to be absolutely clear and present for the next person.
I love that as a strategy, and I love that you're saying it's just 3 minutes, because I occasionally will do a little 10-minute meditation between calls, but if I don't have that time, I'll often skip it, but I almost always have 3 minutes.
Oh, yes, and it's the warrior's way to learn how to center yourself very quickly, then go back out in the world. You know, you don't have to go to a mountaintop in Tibet. What my practice is, my spiritual and energetic practice, is to come back very quickly. When I get thrown off, when I have a disappointment, when I get afraid, when I get angry, whatever it is that we all experience,
mm-hmm.
I breathe, center, come back to myself for 3 minutes, or even for 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Even 3 seconds, because when you go inside like this, it's non-time, non-space. It's not linear time when you go into this inner realm. It's just about the quality of your connection
mm-hmm.
and the intention of your connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's like turning the Titanic, going from the material world into your inner self. But it's so important. It can seem like that. It's hard to turn, you know, getting out of the worldly concerns to, okay, I'm coming back to my own self again, my own spirit to recenter.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to build positive energy and learn how to do that. Most people don't know how to do that, actually, and they get tossed and turned by the tides of life all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and so what's another one of the prescriptions in your book?
Well, okay. You know, one of the prescriptions is learning how to protect yourself from energy vampires.
That's a big topic.
it really is, you know, because I know with my patients, when I take a history, a big source of energy drain comes from relationships. And a lot of people have draining relationships in their life and don't know how to cope with them. And so it's important, if you want to develop more positive energy, to take a really honest inventory of the people in your life, who gives me energy and who drains my energy.
Mm-hmm.
Just be really honest about it. And in general, you want to gravitate towards people who build your energy, who support you, who love you, who are not sapping you as a general rule. You just want to move towards that. But you also have to learn how to deal with draining people. And in Positive Energy, I talk about different types of energy vampires. And also there's a YouTube video that I have up on how to combat energy vampires that people can just go to on YouTube if you type in my name.
So what are some of the energy vampire types and the strategies for dealing with them?
Right. Well, one of the vampires is very common. Is somebody I call a sob sister. And this could be a man or woman. And it's somebody who keeps you on the phone complaining over and over again about the same things but not being willing to get into solutions. And you come home after a long day of seeing patients or work and the phone rings. And it's this person.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going on and on about how they broke up with their boyfriend for the 10th time. Or their mother doesn't understand them, or they're not getting credit at work, you know, that kind of thing. But not that those aren't important issues, but they beat them like a dead horse. They don't let it go, and they often say, when you try and offer solutions, they often say, yes, but.
So
they're more interested in complaining than getting into solutions.
Right. So how would you deal with that? If I imagine you don't have very many sob sisters in your life, but if somebody were to call you and sneak into your phone, how would you address it?
Oh, by the way, I have this happen all the time.
Do you?
All the time, everywhere I go, because I'm a psychiatrist and I work with intuition. And since I've been little, it's like I wear this invisible sign around me, confess, tell me your problems. People tell all to me. They do. It's been, you know, a real challenge for me to set boundaries. I could be on a plane minding my own business, reading the movie magazines, and somebody will start up.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem for me because I need to have alone time where I'm not hearing anybody's issues.
Right.
So that then, you know, when I work with my patients or when I'm in workshops, I can be totally present and joyful and enjoying it. But it's a constant challenge for me, this particular type of energy vampire. And so it's important to be able to set limits with them and to be able to say, you know, you're my friend, I love you. But when you're ready to get into solutions, I'd be more than happy to talk with you. Otherwise, I can only talk to you for a couple minutes about this particular subject.
Mm.
And, you know, I suggest that you get some support for it if you want, you know, some professional support for it. But the way you say it is so critical. You've got to have a tone that's not judging, that's not snippy, that's not blaming. And just say to them, look, I love you. Matter of fact, neutral tone, but this is my limit here.
Mm.
And, you know, at first they might get angry. They might say, well, what kind of friend are you that you don't want to listen to me? And you tell them, you know, I'm a great friend, but I'm learning how to take care of my energy, and this is about what I can do with these topics unless you want to talk about solutions. And then, of course, I'm there 100% for you. And it takes kind of a redefining of the relationship, because if they're used to complaining like this, if they're used to you listening for 2 hours on the phone to their circular issues, then you have to recondition them.
Mm-hmm.
They might say, oh, I totally understand, and then the next week they call and start up again.
Right.
So you have to be consistent. You have to keep coming back with the same positive, neutral attitude, and retrain them, basically, so you don't enable negativity.
I think that's so brilliant. I love that as a strategy. And how about with a stranger, you know, on an airplane? You know, my strategy is I try and be really focused on what I'm doing and hope that sometimes, that, you know, if I'm really needing my space, that we don't start up a conversation because once it starts, it doesn't stop. But how do you deal with the airplane situation?
Yes, well, I think that's a great approach. Just focus on what you're doing and use body language to send a message. You can point your body in the opposite direction. You could look absorbed in what you're doing. But that doesn't always work. Because if you have an open energy field and people can tell you're a very loving person, they'll start up in their own unique way.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to say to them, and I've said this, it's hard, but you have to say to them, you know, look, you know, this is my time to kind of downtime. And so I really just need some quiet time here, something like that.
Mm.
And not encourage them. I mean, whatever you do, if they start up, don't ask them more about it.
Yeah, that's
don't ask them more about their issues, dude. Because if you look concerned, unless you feel drawn to listen. You know, sometimes, I mean, someone will start up and I feel drawn to listen to them. But if you don't feel that, then definitely, you know, just say, gee, I'm so sorry, I'm so tired, I just need to take care of myself here. But I had a situation on a plane the other day. I was coming back from New York. Sometimes these situations are unavoidable, and you do have to go into service and help people.
Mm-hmm.
You do. I mean, I was so tired. I had such a long week, and I just wanted to relax on the plane. And suddenly there was on the loudspeaker, it said, medical emergency, doctor is needed. You know, and I'm sitting there exhausted. I'm thinking, oh, this is the last thing I want to do. But my intuition told me, you better get yourself back there. You can be of help to this person.
Mm.
So I get back there, and the poor old man is on the floor. He looks dead. He's out cold on the floor, and these paramedics are over him, and they say, oh, he has a massive stroke. And I took one look at him. I'm great in crises. I took one look at him. My intuition told me, no, he didn't. He was hypoglycemic, and he just needed to have some juice. But I got down on the floor and I started doing energy work with him. And I got the flight attendants to give him juice, although the paramedics fought me tooth and nail. They were so sure he had a stroke. But he drank the juice, and I did energy work, and he perked up. And he, you know, just became fresh as a daisy, basically. And I asked him to grasp my hand, and he said, and it was a very weak grasp. The paramedic said, oh, he had a stroke. And I said, well, is this how it usually is for you? And he goes, well, I've had polio.
Oh.
So I know. So I kind of gathered all my forces when I felt it was appropriate to be of service, and I was. And he was fine for the rest of the flight. We didn't have to turn the flight around. You know, they were going to turn the plane around and go back to New York. It was crazy. I mean, they were building themselves up into some crescendo of some scenario that didn't have to happen.
Well, I imagine this was really fulfilling for you, because when it's in alignment with your own intuition and energy, then it's, of course, you want to contribute.
I did and I didn't, but that's why I want to present to you the paradox that can happen. My mind was saying, you're too tired, I'm too tired, I don't want to do this.
Mm.
But my intuition came forth and said, no, this is something, you could really be of service here.
Mm.
So that's sometimes the dichotomy of what we can feel. You know, you don't always feel, oh, yes, I'm up for this. You know, your intuition will tell you, oh, yes, this is a good thing, but your mind might tell you, I don't want to do this. You see, that's what happens sometimes inside of yourself. So you have to really listen, you know, and make a choice about what you want to go for. And when my intuition tells me something so strongly, particularly to be of service, I follow it.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter if I'm tired. I mean, that's what I found time and again, that I can help and really make a big difference even if I'm tired. So, you know, this is in terms of dealing with energy vampires versus situations that really warrant your attention when you may not feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are all the nuances of the kinds of intuitive decisions you have to make in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. I think that's very helpful. Well, and I'm wondering, do you think that people that are energy vampires recognize that they are, or is it mostly unintentional?
I think it's mostly unintentional. I think people are unconscious and unaware and have learned patterning from their parents
mm-hmm.
or their families that they carry on in adulthood. So I don't think necessarily that the sob sister or the drama queen or even the criticizer or blamer, other types of energy vampires, are necessarily aware. They're just mimicking this automatic behavior that's negative. And unless you're the one to shift the energy of the interaction, they will probably continue on and on for years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The best case scenario, particularly with friends, and I've had this where and everybody goes through phases of being an energy vampire, by the way. I do, you do, you know, you go through a bad phase, but the great thing is where you can be aware of it and say, oh, my God, I am complaining a lot. Oh, my God, I am being critical. And begin to shift that behavior then. The problem with energy vampires, if they're unaware, is that they don't even know what to do to shift it. But the best case scenario is, let's say with a friend who's being a complainer, where you bring it up to them, they go, oh, wow, I didn't realize that. Thanks for telling me. You know,
mm-hmm.
this is a beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that you bring that up, that, you know, each of us can step into the mode of being an energy vampire from time to time.
Oh, yes.
And any other tips if we recognize maybe elements of that in ourselves, like what we can do to, you know, to turn it around and be a positive source of energy for people instead?
Yes. Well, first of all, be very kind to yourself. If you notice that you're becoming a vampire, just go great for being aware of it. You know, don't beat yourself up for doing it. But that's what people do, I know.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm doing it, I'm a horrible person. What's wrong with me? I'm not positive. But don't do that. Be very loving with yourself and just kind of shift gears and say, all right, you know, maybe I am being very critical of my mate. Maybe it's true. Now, how can I begin to shift that? How can I begin to deal with my own issues or communicate better with my mate rather than just telling him what he isn't doing that's good. So just awareness and shifting of behavior. I get so many emails from people that say, what do I do if I am an energy vampire? And just simply look at your behavior that's draining and shift it. And ask loved ones. They love this question. They're afraid to ask you. They're afraid to bring it up. But if you say, you know, I'm afraid I might maybe a little overcritical lately, what do you think? And they want to hear this, and they go, as a matter of fact, yes, you know, you have been, and thank you for bringing it up. Because when you can communicate this way with people, then you can have real friendships, and you can have real relationships. And you're not just going to be fostering all this resentment for not bringing things up with people.
Right. Well, or avoiding them if you really feel like, you know, I don't have the energy versus, you know, there's certain friends where you get together and it's just, you know, you feel really energy fed. I heard one of those people introduce herself right as she was getting, right as we started the call, Mimi Gabriel. She's one of those great energy people. So love to be with those kinds of people all the time. And
yeah.
And we, you know, can avoid other people, and they would probably prefer we don't avoid them.
No, but sometimes you've got to, you know, just take care of yourself. I mean, you don't need to have peripheral people who are draining your energy. I mean, I once had a woman who was an energy vampire who did my hair. I used to go in there, and she'd talk about the horrors of aging and sags and wrinkles. And by the time I left, I felt like a wreck. And I thought, why do I have to subject myself to this? You know, go to somebody who emphasizes beauty and this is so wonderful and you look great. But it took me a long time to disengage from this woman. You know, you don't want to hear that kind of negativity, so it's totally appropriate to eliminate certain people from your life and bring in more positive people. You deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
You really deserve it. And we get stuck in ruts, but it's important to take inventories. I'm a big believer in taking inventories of the relationships in your life, periodic inventories, and really honestly saying who is giving me energy and who isn't. And you know, if somebody isn't, if they're an energy vampire, how can I help to improve the situation or help communication?
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Conversations with the Masters with host Mary Allen. Mary Allen is a pioneer and leader in the coaching industry and author of the life-altering book, The Power of Inner Choice, 12 Weeks to Living a Life You Love, available everywhere. For more information on this and other coaching services designed to enlighten and empower you, visit lifecoachmary.com. And now, back to our conversation with the Masters.
Well, and how about any kind of concrete ways to counter negativity if it's unintentional, but let's say from children or parents, so you can't exactly cut them completely out? But any other ideas for the ones that are there that don't mean to?
Oh, yes. Well, it's just about with parents. It depends what the parents are doing, because sometimes the mother, the in-laws can be problems, and they could be very critical and controlling and manipulative. All right, so it depends what's going on. But let's say you have a controlling mother-in-law who wants to get, you know, her two cents into everything. Now, you're going to have to very gently and consistently set limits for her. Try to set limits for her and tell her, you know, it hurts my feelings when you criticize my cooking. You know, it hurts my feelings. You know, it really, I would rather not hear that. And to begin to just speak up, basically, but in a way where there are also consequences. I mean, I've had patients who have had really, really, really negative mother-in-laws and father-in-laws, and they've had to set limits in terms of not inviting them to as many family dinners. And when they saw the consequences of their behavior, then, you know, they got better.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are no consequences, there's no reason to change.
Right, so true.
Yeah, because they want to be part of the family and so forth. But, you know, you're also dealing with, you know, maybe 60 or 70-year-old people sometimes who have habits that are really deeply entrenched. And so it's your job just to speak up and say, no, you're hurting my feelings. That's not okay here. But
mm-hmm.
to say it in such a way that it sounds like a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a real knack to words and tone. Now, how you say something to somebody makes all the difference. You could be saying something very difficult to them to hear, but if you say it in a loving, really loving way, neutral way, where you don't have any charge on it, It's amazing what you can get across to people.
Mm-hmm. I love that you've emphasized that point, because it's, I know, one step for people to just boldly communicate, but then it's really the energy behind that message.
Oh, absolutely. It's the energy behind it. It's, now you can say anything, and they're unprepared for it because they expect a kind of difficult message like that to come across with a snippy tone or an angry tone. And if you're loving and you're neutral and you don't have any axe to grind with them, you're just making a point,
mm-hmm.
they're different. You know, they go, oh, okay.
Right. I think it's beautiful.
But just as a general rule, when you're dealing with energy vampires, do not act impulsively. Don't say, I'm sick and tired of your complaining. You know, that kind of thing. If there's a part of you that wants to just lash out, and that will never be effective with them. You have to come from a centered place. And if you can't do that in the moment, then you need to wait, gather yourself together, and then approach them at another point.
Mm-hmm. Great tips.
Well, yeah, and one energy vampire that I have a really hard time with is one I call the chronic talker.
Ah.
Just a motor mouth, you know, who corners you at a party, let's say, or at a conference.
Uh-huh.
They start up. And they don't take a breath, so there's no way to interrupt them. I mean, there's no way to say anything because they don't stop long enough. And they could go on for quite a long time. And you're held hostage there with their words. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, yes. I'm thinking of a couple.
So a terrible feeling. Mm. It's really a terrible feeling. And I have been stuck in that position many a time. And nonverbal cues do not work with these energy vampires.
Well, and especially if you're on the cell phone talking to them. That's what I'm thinking of in particular.
Oh, yeah, the cell phone. And in person, because oftentimes these people will also talk in your face.
Right, right.
And then if you take two steps backward, they will take two steps forward.
Yes, I've experienced that too. So what do we do with this kind of energy vampire?
Well, as hard as it is, you have to interrupt them. You have to stop them in their tracks. You have to say, you know, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, I really need to go on to the next person, or I have to go to the bathroom, or whatever. I have to, you know, express this point because I have a meeting. You know, I just want to tell you this one thing. But you have to interrupt, and that is so hard. It is so hard because you're waiting for an opening, and there isn't one.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be awkward. You will have to stop them in mid-sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's the way you look, it's your energy in which you communicate, and, you know, I'm so sorry I have to interrupt you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to do it, because they won't stop.
Mm.
They won't. I mean, you can try, but I've, in my experience, they just won't stop.
Yeah. it's really about, you know, getting their attention and making that message be really clear. And I, again, coming back to you in that really loving way.
Loving and firm, though.
Loving and firm.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to walk all over you. You know, I did a lot of research on bullying. I was very interested in bullying behavior because it's so connected to the, you know, the school shootings that they found that the shooters and all
yeah.
these massive murders have all been bullied. It's very interesting to me. But bullies will never attack somebody who's a victim.
Mm.
They won't. The bullies go after the victims. So if you stand up to an energy vampire or a bully, they won't go after you. You know, so that's just a fact about a bully. They go for the weakest link in the chain, and they go after those people.
Right. But once you've really made it clear that there's a boundary here and that doesn't work in this relationship, then I've heard stories about that where people have set boundaries and then the relationship with that person will be really great, and the person may continue their critical behavior or negativity other places. But but you know, if you set the standard and you set the boundary, then you're
so
going to be
important.
Maintaining your energy. So I know. So one of the other areas I was hoping to jump into is also talking about. Ways that we can design a high-energy food plan, because really part of where we get our energy is food. So what are some of the seven steps to design a high-energy food plan?
Well, this is a really interesting topic to me because food is sacred energy, and you need to be attuned to the food that you eat. And the only way to do that is to test out various foods in your bodies to see how your energy is affected, not with carbs and sugars where you get that rush. That's not what I'm talking about, but eating healthy foods and seeing how they resonate in your body. And that's a way to construct an energy consistent diet with what's good for you. And why this is so important is that so many people who are intuitive empaths tend to run to the refrigerator and stuff themselves to deal with negative energy. And it's not just emotional eating. It's beyond. It's energetic eating. And around the turn of the century, the face healers typically used to be these really obese women, maybe 300, 400 pounds, who would do laying on of hands healing with their patients. And they felt they needed to be really fat in order to not absorb the pain and the negativity coming from their patients. And it is true that fat is a buffer for negative energy. It's just mass. It puts space between you and the world. But it's an unhealthy coping mechanism. However, many intuitive empaths do overeat to protect themselves from the negative energy because they don't know how to ground themselves or process the energy. And this is all done, you know, subconsciously. You don't think about it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to know if you do that because many of these people who are healers and psychologists and coaches, you know, and in the helping professions, will, after a long day's work, will go to the refrigerator. You know, that's very, very common, you know, and overeat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to understand if you do that, first of all, and practice some of the grounding techniques that I've discussed and that are in positive energy, and also to test out foods that truly give you energy in your body. And people are different. I have different energy types, different food types. For instance, if you're an intuitive empath, you could benefit from a lot of protein because protein will ground you. And you'll feel that if you eat fish, if you eat chicken, whichever one you prefer energetically, you'll feel that grounds you so that you're not so susceptible to absorbing energy. But if you take an intuitive empath who hasn't eaten well that day, then they're much more susceptible to absorbing energy. So if you're an intuitive empath, lots of protein and some vegetables and fruit. But on the other hand, if you have a body type or an energy type that's more grounded and that's more earth-centered, you may want to eat more veggies and lighten up your energy field a little bit with the lighter foods. But you have to test this out in your body. Only you will know how the energy feels. And depending on the phases of your life that you're going through, you may need to alter your diet and your foods. So you have to keep tuning in to how the foods feel inside of you. I mean, literally, compare an apple to an orange in your body.
Mm-hmm. And it's specific to your body.
Exactly. That's the thing. This isn't some kind of general diet that you can get. It's specific to your body. That's the key to intuition. And so many people have tried diets and failed because they haven't considered the energetic piece to this.
Right. Well, and I know part of this program, one thing is you say to recognize alive food from dead food.
Oh, yeah.
And could you maybe give some examples of, you know, dead foods and maybe even some examples of some alive foods that might surprise people?
Well, to just know the difference between dead food and alive food, go and eat a supermarket tomato, see how it feels in your body, then go eat a homegrown sweet luscious tomato, see how that feels in your body. That's the difference between alive and dead foods. Most people eat dead foods all the time, so they're not getting the vibrant energy from food, the ecstasy that can come from food when it's alive. We're not used to alive foods because most of our foods are dead. So if you go towards fresh foods, if you go towards organic, if you stay away from all kinds of chemicals, which deaden foods or antibiotics, you go towards fresh meat, fresh chicken, free-range chicken, all of those kinds of things will bring aliveness to the food. And when you have an alive piece of fruit or an alive vegetable, it is truly an ecstatic experience to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're connecting with the energy of that food, and it's as eating should be.
Yeah,
that's optimal eating.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And until I read this in your book, I hadn't really connected about this concept of alive versus dead food. But for lunch, I mean, normally we eat a nice big organic salad with tons of vegetables. But on days that are really busy, my husband will run and get something from Pickup Sticks or something. And it just doesn't feel as good.
Right. I know. It doesn't feel as good. That's the key. And I think that's what people don't ask themselves, but not feel as good, meaning the sugar rush.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the sugar rush. That's a different kind of, that isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about healthy foods that make you feel more whole and vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the up and down of sugar.
Right. Yeah, not the feel-good buzz of...
No.
That doesn't feel very good to me, the sugar rush. That doesn't feel good.
Yeah, I don't like it because I don't like the ups and downs.
Yeah,
sometimes I like it, but not very often.
Well,
sometimes a nice little piece of chocolate is good.
Yes. Well, and it's a high source of antioxidants, which is also good.
Yeah. But each person, when you're listening to this, you have to assess your own body.
Mm-hmm.
That's the drawback of general diets, is that they're for everybody. And you can't really generalize a diet.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yep. And it keeps coming back to checking within themselves. So you also have something, you talked about how we might be able to get more nourishing sleep or deeper sleep. What are some tips, techniques on that?
Well, sleeping is so essential for energy. And we sleep, I think it's out of a 75-year life, we sleep 5.5 years.
Mm.
You know, we sleep an amazing amount of time. And so sleeping and dreaming and accessing intuition in that way has been a huge part of my life and a part of my work. And it's part of what I teach in intuition is how to sleep well and peacefully and how to remember dreams and access that knowledge. Now, all that is very, very critical. And it's important that you make your bed in your bedroom a sacred place. It's not just a place to plop down or throw your bills or, you know, whatever you put around the bed. It needs to be beautiful and sacred and in honor of the sleep process. And it's not a place to have arguments, the bedroom. It's not a place to, you know, do bills. That isn't the place to do it. Go and do that in another room. The bedroom is for sleeping, and sleeping is something very sacred. It replenishes the body, and it replenishes the soul. And it's been proven that during sleep, new learning occurs. So you want to really make the most of that time as you sleep. And it's also been proven, there was a science article recently that proved when you have complex decisions to make, it's better not to just use the linear mind. It's better to sleep on the decisions so that you can process them in that way during sleep and make better decisions the next day. Very interesting.
Oh, love that. That's so good.
Yeah.
Well, since we're now in the bedroom, sort of a nice segue into talking about heart-centered sexuality, which is also one of the prescriptions. And, of course, I'm kind of curious, you know, why is positive sensuality an important part of the plan?
Well, sexuality is part of human nature. And it's part of the chakra system. It's the energy centers, the first and second chakras. And it's part of our energy balance. And sexuality needs to be balanced and awakened whether you're in a relationship or not. It's not dependent on having sex with somebody else. It's about your connection to your own sexuality and how that feels in your own body. All right, first and foremost, I think in the West, and people who don't know much about tantric sexuality connect it with somebody else only, and they feel that if they're not in a relationship, then their sexuality goes dead.
Mm.
That's a really common belief.
Well, how can someone learn to awaken the sensuality within themselves, whether they're with a partner or not?
Simply by being sensually aware of your environment, the breeze and the leaves and the water and the sound of the fountain and being aware of the sensual aspects of life in your own skin and your own body and taking time to get out of your head and come into your body. and spend some time with it, putting lavender oil on your body, you know, various aromatherapies. You know, whatever your body likes, you can experiment with. But to luxuriate in that and to really make that sensual practice part of your life so that you're aware of your body. People walk around disembodied heads. They're up in their heads thinking, worrying, trying to figure things out, and they forget about their body. A part of sexuality and part of intuition is allowing yourself to have some time in your body and loving it. You know, not looking at your body and going, oh, my God, you know, I'm too fat, I'm too old, whatever negative things come into your head. And say, you're gorgeous. You got a beautiful, wonderful human body here. And, you know, say positive things about your body and treat your body well. And be honor the temple that is your body, that houses the spirit. You know, have that mindset rather than putting yourself down or never looking at yourself naked because you're scared, you're terrified to look at yourself because of the critical aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing the heart into how you view your own body and how you view your own connection to sensuality, sexuality. And then if you do decide to be in a relationship, you can bring all that to the relationship as opposed to expecting the relationship to fill you up. It's a very different perspective. I believe as a psychiatrist and an intuitive, really, that the primary relationship is with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's an ongoing adventure, learning to know yourself, to be loving with yourself, to be aware of yourself, and then you can bring that awareness into your other relationships, which is a great gift.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so once we're in a, let's say, a relationship, can you distinguish between, you know, what would be considered positive sexual energy versus negative sexual energy?
Well, you know, most obviously negative sexual energy is abusive, critical, harsh, ungiving, and destructive. You know, if you have a mate who says, well, I think you ought to lose 5 pounds before you make love, you know, that's very destructive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
But positive sexuality is bringing a sense of heart and spirituality into the connection by honoring your lover and by appreciating, you know, the incredible person that this is and learning how to blend energetically rather than, you know, simply the Western mechanical view of sexuality, which is to have an orgasm and then go on to something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just mechanical sex. I mean, there's a chapter in Positive Energy on sexuality about how to awaken various energy centers during sexuality, during lovemaking, so that you could bring more of a spiritual sense to the eroticism. You know, Western couples aren't really schooled in how to bring different energies into their sexuality. And that's why, in my opinion, you know, passion dies after the first 2 years because people are so addicted just to the hormones or the initial rush of getting to know somebody that they don't know how to prolong the energies and deepen them over, you know, the long haul so that passion continues and continues and continues in many different forms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love it, sort of kind of circles back to this overall theme about coming back into this positive, loving energy that then is exuded out into the world.
Oh, that's so important. I mean, I believe the personal work we do on ourselves is the place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And that has great power. Great power. Everyone is listening. You know, the work that you do on yourself, the baby steps that you make each day are huge. And it has the ripple effect. Your progress towards the heart affects me, affects everyone, and it ripples out into the world energetically. I mean, that's just an energetic fact in terms of the currents of how energy flows. So never think that your triumph over being anxious one day isn't going to benefit me.
Right, right.
It benefits us all. The work we're doing and the work in terms of service of helping other people, it resonates out, and this is what can change the world.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be in a position where you're out trying to change, you know, find world peace when you're, you know, a warring state inside of you. Mm-hmm. That's incongruent, and it won't serve you, and it won't serve the greater purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we got to come back. Well, and so one of the big ways these days that people are having their energy rocked is, I love this term, techno-despair. So we've got to, I know we've got just a few more minutes left in the call, but can you address the overload of emails and computers and phones and all of, what's the cure for techno-despair?
Balance. Techno-despair comes from information overload. It comes from being addicted to computers and staying glued to them for too long so you become zombie-like and your energy gets drained and you become numb from computers. You have to learn to not stay glued for 8 hours a day, to take breaks, to have human contact, to meditate, to do yoga stretches, to balance it out so that you're not just relating to your technology.
Mm.
Technology is amazing, but it needs to be balanced with other energies. Otherwise, it can really, as a psychiatrist, I've seen turns into anxiety disorders, which is called techno-despair, where people can get so anxious, all their machines break or they lose their material, whatever it is, can create such anxiety, ongoing anxiety, that it needs to be really balanced and kept in perspective.
And again, then we're back to a three-minute mini meditation or just taking a little five-minute technology fast. It doesn't need to even be a ton, but just it's that act of coming back and doing something simple to rejuvenate the energy.
Absolutely. And just getting in the habit and writing yourself notes to do it. And even with the overeating, I tell people to put a meditation pillow by the refrigerator. So instead of going and overeating, they could sit and meditate for 3 minutes.
Oh, that's a beautiful tip.
Yeah, it's just a reminder.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Well, you got me really inspired to not be so glued to the beloved computer. And I'm noticing we've got just a few minutes left, and I know you have an upcoming workshop, and I'd love to hear more about it and who it's for, and tell us what you have cooking.
Yes, I'm giving a workshop in Los Angeles on May 3rd. It's a one-day intensive on awakening intuition for health, energy, and emotional freedom. And it's going to talk about some of the things we talked about in this call and how to maintain your energy in an overwhelming world. What do you do if you're an intuitive empath and you're drained? How do you deal with energy vampires? How do you connect with your intuition and bring a spiritual sensibility to all of this? And so it's a day really to rejuvenate, and it will be at Loyola University on Saturday, May 3rd. And people can go on my website to sign up. It's drjudithorloff, O-R-L-O-F-F.com. And it's on my homepage of my website. Or there's also a phone number, 310-338-1971. And it's for the general public, but a lot of coaches come to my workshops, a lot of people in the service professions, clergy, teachers, a lot of mothers and daughters come to my workshops, actually.
Mm.
It's wonderful. I love that. They want to learn about this together.
Right.
It's fantastic.
So it sounds like a fabulous opportunity to really ground these principles, really master what it is to cultivate this positive energy. And I love this, too, really about awakening intuition. Is there, can you give us one tip on how we can sharpen our intuition, just a teaser from what they might learn at the workshop on awakening intuition?
Oh, yes. Well, just, you know, taking an inventory of who gives you energy and who drains you. That's an intuition.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to your body. What does your body tell you about people? Honestly, what do you feel? Do you feel like you want to take a nap after you're with somebody? Or do you feel like so much better after you have lunch with someone and just so buoyed by their energy and by their friendship? So just listen to your body. That's a quick tip. But there are, you know, obviously many, many others that we'll go through. And you know, I invite everyone on this call. You can fly from all over the country to come in.
Right.
To have everyone there.
Wow. So May 3rd, your website, and I'll be sending out a follow-up email this week, so it will include that link, as well as you've got a fabulous series. I was blown away with the the little video clips you have on YouTube. So another way that they can get more of Judith is go to YouTube, and I'll have the links available for that. And I also really want to recommend that everybody pick up a copy, your own copy, of Positive Energy. Judith, I know you were on Dave Carpenter's Exceptional Wisdom radio show, and he was so bragging on you. He's like, I bought, you know, dozens and dozens of her book and have given it to my friends, and he was just raving. One of the reasons when we crossed paths, I'm like, oh, we must have you as a guest for Conversations with the Masters.
Oh, how fantastic.
Yeah, but Positive Energy, Dave Carpenter is like buying up those books, and now I understand why. So if you don't have a copy of Positive Energy, it's on Amazon.com and probably bookstores all across the country as well. Well, so we're top of the hour. Any just final last kind of words, tips to our listeners here today?
Yes, you can start all this just right in the moment. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. It doesn't matter how much you haven't listened or whatever is in the past. You can begin right now to really honor your own intuition, to tune in, to walk out the door from this call and begin to see where your energy goes. You know, and look at it as an adventure. You know, we only have so much time in this life. And once you learn to protect your own energy and build it, it creates such a different quality of life than you can ever imagine when you bring this kind of awareness to energy. And then you can get the life that you deserve.
Yeah.
But you can do it now and just do baby steps. I had it with epiphanies. You know, these big life-changing transformations, I think these little steps are so valuable to do them with great love and to honor each step forward that you make. Mm. And don't be too discouraged with steps back either. It just happens. It's part of the learning process. We just have to keep picking ourselves up again and moving towards the heart.
Yes. Oh, so well said. We can begin now. And with that, I want to just thank you. I honor you, and I love the work that you're doing, and I just so love that our paths crossed as synchronistically as they did.
Oh, yes, me too, and I just want to thank everyone on this call and all the presence of your energy. I could feel it, and I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Judith, for being here. I'll look forward to
thank you for all your great work.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Conversations with the Masters with your host, Mary Allen. If you would like to participate in upcoming live conference call interviews, visit www.lifecoachmary.com. Transcripts and audio of previous interviews with such masters as Wayne Dyer, Carolyn Mace, Debbie Ford, Byron Katie, and others are available on iTunes or at www.lifecoachmary.com. For more information on the work of Mary Allen, her upcoming Success and Inner Peace Boot Camp, or to sign up for her free online newsletter, Soulfully Living, and to receive inspiring daily quotes, visit lifecoachmary.com. Thank you for being committed to your own personal and spiritual development, and thank you for spreading the word about the Conversations with the Masters series. We wish you a fabulous day.